Chapter 127. Oh, the hardness of heart of these inveterate men! Apostrophe apostrophe ejaculated Mr. Stiggins. Oh, the accursed cruelty of these inhuman persecutors! Apostrophe, with these words, Mr. Stiggins again cast up his eyes, and wrapped his breast with his umbrella. And it is but justice to the reverend gentleman to say that his indignation appeared very real and unfeigned indeed. After Mrs. Weller and the red-nosed gentleman had commented on this inhuman usage in a very forcible manner, and had vented a variety of pious and holy execrations against its authors, the latter recommended a bottle of port wine, warmed with a little water, spice, and sugar, as being grateful to the stomach, and savoring less of vanity than many other compounds. It was accordingly ordered to be prepared, and pending its preparation the red-nosed man and Mrs. Weller looked at the elder W. and groaned. Well, Sammy, apostrophe said the gentleman, I hope you will find your spirits rose by this here lively visit. Worry cheerful and improving conversation, ain't it, Sammy? Apostrophe apostrophe, you're a reprobate, apostrophe replied Sam. And I desire you won't address no more odum ungraceful remarks to me. Apostrophe, so far from being edified by this very proper reply, the elder Mr. Weller at once relapsed into a broad grin, and this inexorable conduct causing the lady and Mr. Stiggins to close their eyes, and rock themselves to and fro on their chairs, in a troubled manner, he furthermore indulged in several acts of pantomime, indicative of a desire to pummel and wring the nose of the aforesaid Stiggins, the performance of which appeared to afford him great mental relief. The old gentleman very narrowly escaped detection in one instance. For Mr. Stiggins happening to give a start on the arrival of the negus, brought his head in smart contact with the clenched fist with which Mr. Weller had been describing imaginary fireworks in the air, within 2 inches of his ear, for some minutes. What are you a-raking out your hand for the tumbler in that ear-sodge way for? Apostrophe apostrophe said Sam, with great promptitude. Don't you see you've hit the gen? Apostrophe apostrophe, I didn't go to do it, Sammy, apostrophe said Mr. Weller, in some degree abashed by the very unexpected occurrence of the incident. Try an inert application, sir, apostrophe said Sam, as the red-nosed gentleman rubbed his head with a rueful visage. What do you think o' that, for a go-o-wanity, warm, sir? Apostrophe apostrophe, Mr. Stiggins made no verbal answer, but his manner was expressive. He tasted the contents of the glass which Sam had placed in his hand, put his umbrella on the floor, and tasted it again, passing his hand placidly across his stomach twice or thrice. He then drank the whole at a breath, and smacking his lips, held out the tumbler for more. Nor was Mrs. Weller behindhand in doing justice to the composition. The good lady began by protesting that she couldn't touch a drop, then took a small drop, then a large drop, then a great many drops, and her feelings being of the nature of those substances which are powerfully affected by the application of strong waters, she dropped a tear with every drop of negus, and so got on, melting the feelings down, until at length she had arrived at a very pathetic and decent pitch of misery. The elder Mr. Weller observed these signs and tokens with many manifestations of disgust, and when, after a second jug of the same, Mr. Stiggins began to sigh in a dismal manner, he plainly evinced his disapprobation of the whole proceedings, by sundry incoherent ramblings of speech, among which frequent angry repetitions of the word gammon were alone distinguishable to the ear. I'll tell you what it is, Samivel, my boy, apostrophe whispered the old gentleman into his son's ear, after a long and steadfast contemplation of his lady and Mr. Stiggins. I think there must be something wrong in your mother-in-law's inside, as well as in that oh the red-nosed man. Apostrophe, what do you mean? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Sam. I mean this here, Sammy, apostrophe replied the old gentleman, that what they drink don't seem no nourishment to 'em. It all turns to warm water, and comes a pouring out of their eyes. Pend upon it, Sammy, it's a constitutional infirmity. Mr. Weller delivered this scientific opinion with many confirmatory frowns and nods, which, Mrs. Weller remarking, and concluding that they bore some disparaging reference either to herself, or to Mr. Stiggins, or to both, was on the point of becoming infinitely worse, when Mr. Stiggins, getting on his legs as well as he could, proceeded to deliver an edifying discourse for the benefit of the company, but more especially of Mr. Samuel, whom he adjured in moving terms to be upon his guard in that sink of iniquity into which he was cast, to abstain from all hypocrisy and pride of heart, and to take in all things exact pattern and copy by him Stiggins, in which case he might calculate on arriving, sooner or later at the comfortable conclusion, that, like him, he was a most estimable and blameless character, and that all his acquaintances and friends were hopelessly abandoned and profligate wretches. Which consideration, he said, could not but afford him the liveliest satisfaction. He furthermore conjured him to avoid, above all things, the vice of intoxication, which he likened unto the filthy habits of swine, and to those poisonous and baleful drugs which being chewed in the mouth, are said to filch away the memory. At this point of his discourse, the reverend and red-nosed gentleman became singularly incoherent, and staggering to and fro in the excitement of his eloquence, was fain to catch at the back of a chair to preserve his perpendicular. Mr. Stiggins did not desire his hearers to be upon their guard against those false prophets and wretched mockers of religion, who, without sense to expound its first doctrines, or hearts to feel its first principles, are more dangerous members of society than the common criminal, imposing, as they necessarily do, upon the weakest and worst informed, casting scorn and contempt on what should be held most sacred, and bringing into partial disrepute large bodies of virtuous and well-conducted persons of many excellent sects and persuasions. But as he leaned over the back of the chair for a considerable time, and closing one eye, winked a good deal with the other, it is presumed that he thought all this, but kept it to himself. During the delivery of the oration, Mrs. Weller sobbed and wept at the end of the paragraphs, while Sam, sitting cross-legged on a chair, and resting his arms on the top rail, regarded the speaker with great suavity and blandness of demeanor, occasionally bestowing a look of recognition on the old gentleman, who was delighted at the beginning, and went to sleep about halfway. Bravo, worry pretty. Said Sam, when the red-nosed man having finished, pulled his worn gloves on, thereby thrusting his fingers through the broken tops till the knuckles were disclosed to view. Worry pretty. I hope it may do you good, Samuel, said Mrs. Weller solemnly. I think it will, Mum, replied Sam. I wish I could hope that it would do your father good, said Mrs. Weller. Thankee, my dear, said Mr. Weller, Senior. How do you find yourself arter it, my love? Scoffer. Exclaimed Mrs. Weller. Benighted man. Said the Reverend Mr. Stiggins. If I don't get no better light than that ere moonshine o' yourn, my worthy creeter, said the elder Mr. Weller, it's worry likely as I shall continue to be a night coach till I'm took off the road altogether. Now, Mrs. Wee, if the people stands at livery much longer, he'll stand at nothing as we go back, and p'raps that ere armchair'll be tipped over into some hedge or another, with the shepherd in it. At this supposition, the Reverend Mr. Stiggins, in evident consternation, gathered up his hat and umbrella, and proposed an immediate departure, to which Mrs. Weller assented. Sam walked with them to the lodge gate, and took a dutiful leave. Adieu, Samuel, said the old gentleman. What's ado? Inquired Sammy. Well, goodbye then, said the old gentleman. Oh, that's what you're aiming at, is it? Apostrophe apostrophe said Sam. Goodbye. Apostrophe Sammy. Apostrophe whispered Mr. Weller, looking cautiously around. My duty to your governor, and tell him, if he thinks better of this here business, to communicate with me. Me and a cabinet maker as do I stay plan for getting him out. A pianer, Samival a pianer. Apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Weller, striking his son on the chest with the back of his hand, and falling back a step or two. What do you mean? Apostrophe apostrophe said Sam. A pianer 40, Samival, apostrophe rejoined Mr. Weller, in a still more mysterious manner, as he can have on hire. Von as von, play, Sammy. Apostrophe, and what ud be the good o' that? Apostrophe apostrophe said Sam. Let him send to my friend, the cabinet maker, to fetch it back, Sammy, apostrophe replied Mr. Weller. Are you awake now? Apostrophe, no, apostrophe rejoined Sam. There ain't no works in it, apostrophe whispered his father. It'll hold him easy, with his hat and shoes on, and breathe through the legs, which his holler. Have a passage ready taken for America. The American government will never give him up, then once they find that he's got money to spend, Sammy. Let the governor stop there, till Mrs. Bartle's dead, or Mr. Dodson and Fox hung,
which last event I think, is the most likely to happen first, Sammy,
and then let him come back, and write a book about the Americans as'll pay all his expenses and more, if he blows them up enough. Apostrophe, Mr. Weller delivered this hurried abstract of his plot with great vehemence of whisper, and then, as if fearful of weakening the effect of the tremendous communication by any further dialogue, he gave the coachman salute, and vanished. Sam had scarcely recovered his usual composure of countenance, which had been greatly disturbed by the secret communication of his respected relative, when Mr. Pickwick accosted him. Sam, apostrophe said that gentleman. Sir, apostrophe replied Mr. Weller. I am going for a walk round the prison, and I wish you to attend me. I see a prisoner we know coming this way, Sam, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, smiling. Which, sir? Apostrophe inquired Mr. Weller, the gentleman with the head o' hair, or the interesting captive in the stockings. Apostrophe apostrophe, neither, apostrophe rejoined Mr. Pickwick. He is an older friend of yours, Sam. Apostrophe, oh mine, sir. Apostrophe apostrophe exclaimed Mr. Weller. You recollect the gentleman very well, I dare say, Sam, apostrophe replied Mr. Pickwick, or else you are more unmindful of your old acquaintances than I think you are. Hush. Not a word, Sam. Not a syllable. Here he is. Apostrophe, as Mr. Pickwick spoke, Jingle walked up. He looked less miserable than before, being clad in a half-worn suit of clothes, which, with Mr. Pickwick's assistance, had been released from the pawnbroker's. He wore clean linen too, and had had his hair cut. He was very pale and thin, however, and as he crept slowly up, leaning on a stick, it was easy to see that he had suffered severely from illness and want, and was still very weak. He took off his hat as Mr. Pickwick saluted him, and seemed much humbled and abashed at the sight of Sam Weller. Following close at his heels, came Mr. Job Trotter, in the catalogue of whose vices, want of faith and attachment to his companion, could at all events find no place. He was still ragged and squalid, but his face was not quite so hollow as on his first meeting with Mr. Pickwick, a few days before. As he took off his hat to our benevolent old friend, he murmured some broken expressions of gratitude, and muttered something about having been saved from starving. Well, well, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, impatiently interrupting him, you can follow with Sam. I want to speak to you, Mr. Jingle. Can you walk without his arm? Apostrophe apostrophe, certainly, sir, already not too fast legs, shaky head, queer round and round, earthquakey sort of feeling very. Apostrophe, here, give me your arm, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. No, no, apostrophe replied Jingle, won't indeed rather not. Apostrophe, nonsense, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick. Lean upon me, I desire, sir. Apostrophe, seeing that he was confused and agitated, and uncertain what to do, Mr. Pickwick cut the matter short by drawing the invalided stroller's arm through his, and leading him away, without saying another word about it. During the whole of this time the countenance of Mr. Samuel Weller had exhibited an expression of the most overwhelming and absorbing astonishment that the imagination can portray. After looking from Job to Jingle, and from Jingle to Job in profound silence, he softly ejaculated the words, "Well, I am damned!" Apostrophe, apostrophe, which he repeated at least a score of times, after which exertion, he appeared wholly bereft of speech, and again cast his eyes, first upon the one, and then upon the other, in mute perplexity and bewilderment. "Now, Sam!" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick, looking back. "I may come in, sir," apostrophe, replied Mr. Weller, mechanically following his master, and still he lifted not his eyes from Mr. Job Trotter, who walked at his side in silence. Job kept his eyes fixed on the ground for some time. Sam, with his glued to Job's countenance, ran up against the people who were walking about, and fell over little children, and stumbled against steps and railings, without appearing at all sensible of it, until Job, looking stealthily up, said, "How do you do, Mr. Weller?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Sam. And having established Job's identity beyond all doubt, he smote his leg, and vented his feelings in a long, shrill whistle. "Things has altered with me, sir," apostrophe, said Job. "I should think they had," apostrophe, exclaimed Mr. Weller, surveying his companion's rags with undisguised wonder. This is Rather a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.